So I want to thank everyone for letting me speak today. I was going to be in town for a couple weeks to visit Brian's, wherever he went. I actually don't see him. There he is. Yeah, I'm not used to wearing glasses either, right? So that's new to me. I'm going to be fishing with Malcolm. Since I was down, I asked Brian to approach the church and, you know, just ask if I could give a couple lessons when I'm down. And so I appreciate you all letting me do that. I don't do a lot of speaking. It's extremely rare that I speak, actually. Maybe I get one or two sermons a year, but, you know, that's about it. I just like talking about the stories when I get the chance. I've always loved the stories in the Bible. I mean, I just could never get enough of them. When I was younger, I used to read these stories, and I thought, wow, you know, it would be so great to be doing all those great things. You know, those stories in the Bible. And then you read them more, and you realize that it's actually God who is doing all the great things, right? And, you know, you read the stories, and it just seems like, you know, the people that are involved are actually doing less and less. God's doing all the work. And then in time, as you read the stories over and over, you realize that, you know, all you're really trying to do is be useful to God. God has put gifts and talents into other people that they don't even see, you know. And what would amaze you if the person sitting next to you, God has put in them talents and abilities so extreme that they have no idea how far that talent can really go. They have no idea whatsoever. But you might be able to help them with that. And probably something even more unbelievable, and probably no one will believe this, but you actually might be one of those people that has a talent so extreme that you have no idea how far God can take it. And, you know, it's kind of like the story of Samson, right? It's like you read about all these amazing things, and it's like, I bet he had no idea how far some of that stuff would have been taken, right? So we're going to talk about a story in the Bible today. It's one of my favorites in the book of Judges. It's about Deborah. And, you know, sometimes when I think about Deborah, I think of her as, you know, I don't know why she doesn't get more play, but, you know, she may very well be the greatest female prophet that ever walked the earth. You know, but the more you read about it, it's like, you know what, how much was she doing here? She just kind of helped other people to be used of God because she was willing to be used of God herself, right? So that's where we're going to go with all these stories. I'm going to encourage you just to be used of God. When the moment of truth comes to you, don't back down. Don't take a back seat. Do what God needs you to do. Because sometimes God really needs you. He can need you in a sudden moment. And you need to act, right? So, you know, just think about these things. So Judges chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. The sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord after their prior judge Ehud died, and the Lord sold them into the hands of Jabin, the king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor, and the commander of his army was Sisera. I'm not going to pronounce these things right. I don't lose any sleep over that. When you see my name on the board over that, over there, you don't even know how to pronounce my name, right? You know, it's kind of like a game I play. Hey, can you say my name? I bet you can't. So just imagine how difficult, you know, it is talking about people that far in the past and, you know, nailing, you know, we don't know how their names were pronounced, right? But, you know, who gave them into the hands of their enemies? The Lord did that. The Lord did that because they were in sin. I think it's kind of a telling commentary on us, on people in general, and me in specific. Sometimes in order for God to get our attention, he has to take our things away. Like, you know, like we're all children. God has to take away the Nintendo for 5 minutes. Otherwise we won't even think about him at all. And when you fall on hard times in life, I want you to think about that. Not like God is necessarily punishing you, but you know, sometimes when you go through hard times, you know, that's just an opportunity to maybe think about God in ways that you haven't before, and to, you know, God just humbles people. It's actually good, right? So, you know, we don't have to be depressed. We don't have to give up. Sometimes it's actually, instead of having less opportunity, it gives us more opportunity. So, verse 4, here's the opportunity. It's Deborah. She's a prophetess. She's married. She was judging Israel at that time. We're going to come back to that at the very end. She was judging Israel. She sat under the palm tree, and people used the verse, end of verse 5. It was in Ephraim. People came to her for judgment. She sat under, you know, a tree. And just imagine all the time that she spent teaching. And you know that when you teach, you know, it doesn't really seem amazing. You're just saying what God said. You're trying to help people. People are coming to you with their problems and their dilemmas. They're very broken. We know that Israel was in a very poor spiritual state. And they were in a very poor physical state. So just imagine the caliber and the magnitude of broken people from broken families. And they don't know who to talk to. And there's not many people that even care about the Lord. But up in the mountains of Ephraim, there's this one person, you know, they can just talk. And when they talk to this person, she talks about God and how much God loves them and how God can change their life. And it might not change anything else, but God is going to work in the soil of their soul. And you know, a lot of things that inside are wrong can be right. Because that's the real work that God does, right? God's work is so great that it can even change the heart. That's his real power and strength. So she, one day she's doing this, and she summoned for a guy named Barak. Barak. I'm probably going to say it both ways in the sermon. I don't even care how I say it. But she summons this guy, and she says, you know, because she's helping other people be more spiritual, right? She's just helping. This guy is in a position where he can, like, summon the people, and, you know, Israel is at a state where now they've grown to a point where they can solve other problems, right? You can't solve some of the physical problems until you solve some of the internal problems. You have to deal with the inside first. So she's been teaching for years, and God has a charge for Barak. He needs to go out, and he needs to fight against the Canaanites, and here's the best part. God is already doing the work. All he needs to do is go, and God is going to draw them out. And, hey, it all sounds easy here, right? You just summon the people, summon 10,000 people, God's going to draw them out, and, hey, you're going to win. And what does he say to this? It's kind of interesting. Because he says, you know, I'll go, but only if you go. Unfortunately, this is the wrong thing to say, right? And again, this is something that we're gonna come back to all this at the end. Because like if I asked you, are you going to go to services today? I don't know. I'll go, but only if you go. I guess if you don't go, I'll just stay home and I'll play Mario Kart or something like that. You know? But if you go, I'll go. Is that the right way to conduct your life as a Christian? No. The right way to do it as a Christian. I'm going to go if no one is going with me. I'm going to go if I have to walk. I'm going to go if I have to call for a ride. I'm going to go even if I have to go in clothes that normally people... I'm just going to go, right? And when you become a Christian, you need to be absolutely determined. You're not going to rely on others. You want to grow to a point where you're the person who is bringing other people along. You're the person who is encouraging others. You're the person who is patting people on the back. You don't want to be one of these people where, you know, I'll go only if someone else is always dragging me along. If someone else will be my conscience, right? You want to have a strong conscience. You want to have a conviction. I'm going to follow God even if it kills me. I'm going to follow God even if no one else approves. I'm going to follow God, even if my family doesn't share the same values as me. That's actually how this one is going to end. So she says, well, you know, God is still going to do this, but, you know, someone else is going to get the credit because of this. You're not going to get any glory out of this. He is still going to derive a benefit. So, so he goes out and he gathers 10,000 people from, the two tribes here, Zebulun and Naphtali, in verse 10. You know, to his credit, he goes and does it, right? You know, not everyone who follows God is necessarily a Job. You know, I mean, some of us are like the friends at the end of the book. Everyone, you know, does what God says, so it's all good. But, you know, some of us are just more broken than others. Some of us need more help than others. That's all the more important then to be a helper. So there's this little gem that's thrown in here. It seems kind of almost out of place for the story. It mentions that, verse 11, Heber the Kenite had separated himself from the Kenites, from the sons of Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses, and had pitched his tent far away as the oak of Zananim, which is in Kadesh. And they told Sisera that Barak, the son of Hinnom, had gone up to Mount Tabor. And Sisera gathered his chariots, 900 chariots, and all the people who were with him, from Heshbon to the river Kishon. So, you know, sometimes you read things in the Bible that actually are a little disappointed. I'm so disappointed when I read about some of the people that actually it started out good. You know, I mean, these are the descendants of Moses, again, right? And granted, this was many, many, many years ago. But, you know, now they've become like the enemies. They've become enemies of God. They've thrown in with the enemies. Their minds have been completely corrupted. And they actually rat out what Deborah and Barak are doing. Have you ever been faced with a problem and you thought, wow, this person is totally undoing my work? This problem is too big for me. Things are going wrong now. Have you ever thought about things going wrong now as God's way of helping things go right now? This story should completely change our mind on how we view problems. Things that normally would make some people feel broken, it should be extremely encouraging to us. It's kind of like towards the end of Genesis, where Jacob finds out that he is going to have to send his sons back to Egypt to go get grain after the man had warned them not to come back except with Benjamin. And they're arguing about this. And he says, you see all this stuff? You see all these things? All of these things are working against me. Everything is working against me. But were things really going wrong for Jacob? Did God want Jacob to go to Egypt in order to destroy the people or to save the people? See? So sometimes we can think, you see, all these things are working against me. You see how life is kicking me again? You see how life is kicking me when I'm down? What if God is actually using these things to do something really amazing? Things that we can't even appreciate because God has put talents and abilities in you that you have no idea how far they're going to go. And kind of like with your child, you might have to take your Nintendo away for a short thing. Time like Israel, you might have to have problems for a little while. Like Barak with the Kenites, you might need a couple of people to try real hard to undo your work, and they are going to make a project out of you to make you fail. Does that sound like the formula of success? Sounds like everything's going great in this story then. This is exactly how God likes to work. Faith when it's alone. Faith when it's against all obstacles. Faith when everyone thinks that this stuff absolutely won't fly. So Deborah says to Barak, arise, this is the day that the Lord has given Sisera into your hands.
Behold, the Lord has gone out before you. Man, I love the few times that you hear Deborah speak. It's like all the things that she says. It's just absolutely amazing. We're going to kind of rush through chapter 4 because I think the real lessons are in chapter 5. So, where's the epic battle? Israel is supposed to be slaughtered, right? You read like verse 14 and 15, and all of a sudden the battle is over. Just bam, it's done. It's like, where did it go? In verse 15, the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots. You notice how the Lord is actually doing all this stuff? We're just being useful. The Lord is doing all this stuff. So, what a worm this guy is. There's a lot of things that we learn about Canaanite culture here that's just absolutely despicable. So when the general of the Canaanites realizes that they are going to lose the battle, he actually throws his own army under the bus in order to save his own skin. He sends his troops off to a place that he knows they're going to be slaughtered, and it's like he just kind of jumps out and runs away, and he lets everyone else go, knowing full well that they're going to be slaughtered. But if it saves his life, it's worth it. I don't know, there's something about this guy that just seems unbelievably dishonorable and unbelievably despicable. So he flies away on foot, and in verse 17, where does he end up? He ends up at a friendly camp. You might even know where this person is, because remember, this is the tent. This is the household that was informing for him in the first place. The man of the house, the husband isn't home. The only one that's there is his wife. Her name is Jael. And, evidently her and her husband don't exactly see eye to eye on spiritual matters. You remember what the Bible says in the New Testament about if you have an unbelieving spouse? It doesn't say, well, you know, if your husband doesn't go to services, you know, you don't go to services, you know. It's like, if you have an unbelieving spouse, you really need to be on your A-game as a Christian. Because unless you are completely faithful and committed to doing exactly what God needs you to be, if you're not going to stand when the ball is thrown on you, if you're going to falter when God needs you to act, then there is no chance whatsoever that your husband is going to be saved, that your spouse is going to be saved. You don't, and I'll put it another way, you don't make that person stronger by you making yourself weaker, right? So this guy comes in, he says, you know, can I hide here? Oh yeah, you have some water. You know, he knows he's in a friendly place. He asks for water. She gives him milk. He says, hey, if anyone comes and asks if anyone has been here, say no. So she puts a little carpet over him after he's drank his milk. And you can imagine her kind of like kneeling with her hammer and her tent peg and down he goes. And so in verse 22, Barak arrives, and from pursuing Sisera very closely, and he says, hey, here's the man. And you know, they walk in, and you know, there he is under the rug with the tent they threw him. So verse 23, so God subdued on that day Jabin, the king of Canaan, before the sons of Israel. And the hand of the sons of Israel pressed heavier and heavier upon Jabin the Canaan until they had destroyed Jabin the king of Canaan. You know, sometimes God can do above what we ask or think. Do you know that this is the last time that you're going to hear about the Canaanites really being a problem for Israel? This isn't like the Philistines where they were fighting them for centuries and centuries. This is actually the death blow for the Canaanites. They are never going to be a problem again. You know? If we act in good faith, you know, there's some problems that really can be solved. Not every problem is going to vex you for life. You know, some of us have problems that when we're younger, you know, we struggle with it, but we turn it over to God. We avail ourselves to the help of the brethren. You know, we come clean. You know, we make a clean break with sin. Hey, some of those things really can be gone. Later in life, you won't struggle with that at all. You might have another set of problems, right? But you know, some of those things, you can get the monkey off your back. You know, just pray about it. You know, have faith. Take it to God. So chapter five is a reflection. We already know the story. We know what happens. But we might not have recognized the elements of faith. And we might need help understanding what was really going on here. So chapter 5 begins that the leaders led in Israel, the people volunteered. I'm going to submit that a lot of this story is actually about the leaders. When the story begins and it says, the leaders led. Okay, I get it. This little song here is about the leaders. Well, I thought it was about Deborah, you know. I'm going to submit this about Deborah. Deborah knew how to help other people. She wasn't somebody who was trying to pretend that she was something that she wasn't. She wasn't trying to do other people's jobs. It's kind of like, I know some Christians that are really, really, they're faithful in the Lord. They're such a pillar to the church. And when they tell their story, you know what they begin with? I had a praying grandmother. Where no one else believed in me and everyone else thought I had a lost cause. I had a praying grandmother. You know, Granny couldn't live your life. She couldn't make your choices for you. She couldn't, you know, be with you everywhere. She couldn't be you. She wasn't trying to be something that she wasn't. But when you're over, she could talk about how wonderful it is to be a Christian. You know, being a Christian is just the best life that anyone can be. And possibly live. You know, she shared that. And, you know, she prayed and she prayed and she prayed and she prayed. You know, you look at where that person is 20 or 30 years later. You know, some of you actually have praying grandmas or praying grandpas. Some of you will reach a point where you're going to be that praying grandma or that praying grandma. Is it easy to underrate how important that is? You know, I could go off on this forever, right? But I want you to notice in verse 4, it said, Lord, when you went out from Seir. One of the things that impressed me about Deborah is she really had a solid grasp of God working in life, you know. You read the Psalms. The psalmist had a real sense that God was working in their life. So what I want to do, I want those people that see God is working in your life. Sometimes people, when they get baptized, all of a sudden the dirt comes out and they think, oh no, I'm exposed. They're going to find out whatever I am, you know. Oh no, I wish we could have kept this hidden and I could just move on. They become demotivated and sometimes they fall away, right? But what if you could be that person? You could be that person like Deborah. I see God working in your life. And God exposes things, not to shame people, but God exposes things because that's what it takes to heal a relationship. And when things are exposed, then it's easier to talk about it and deal with it. And God is always trying to heal the relationship. I want to be one of those people that I see God working in other people's lives, because I want to be a helper. I can't be them. I can't make their decisions. I can't do their job. But you know what? I can be a helper. You know, the more I think about Deborah, you know, I just, what exactly does she do? You know, all these other people are doing all these great things. And verse 6, the next section, verses 6 through 11. When am I supposed to shut up? Is it 11:30? It's 11:30 then. I got a lot of ground to cover. So in verse 6 through 11, I want you to notice that things weren't easy when she started to do her work. In the days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were deserted, the travelers went by in the roundabout ways. In her day, the roads were so violent that you actually couldn't travel. So it sounds like Israel, they just all tried to cluster in little communities. They couldn't travel because they'd be picked off by the Canaanites. Things were so tough. Verse 8, unfortunately, the people became very idolatrous. Can you imagine how difficult that would be? You're scared. Things aren't safe. But she says, until I, Deborah, arose, a mother in Israel, and she talks about how the heart goes out to the commanders, the volunteers, again, the leaders that got people involved. So I'm just going to submit this. You start doing things for the Lord, you try helping people, and you don't see immediate results. Imagine Deborah teaching day after day after day, and the roads are still violent, the people are still idolatrous. She doesn't see a lot of good coming from it, right? In the days of Shamgar, things actually didn't improve at all. Imagine being Shamgar and you're investing all this time and you're doing all this work and actually nothing improves. The people don't improve. The conditions don't improve. I mean, nothing improves. Can you still be faithful to God? Can you be faithful to God if you don't see anything improving? Can you be like Shamgar and you can live your whole life without even rules? But you know what? I'm going to be faithful to God even if no one else is faithful to God. I don't need to be pulled along. I don't need to be one of these people. Well, yeah, I'll go, but only if you go. Because I'm going to go no matter what. I'm going to be faithful to God if it kills me. No matter what it takes, no matter what it costs, if I have to pluck out the eye, cut off the hand, if I have to give up everything that I have, if I have to forsake father and mother, I'm going to be faithful to God. And what if no lesser thing will actually do, or you're just another one of the people that you're treating God like an idol? You don't know it, but you're treating God just like an idol. He is just another veil. So, I want you to notice in verses 12 through 23, I'm just going to kind of cut through some of this stuff quick. There were a lot of people that said yes, but there were a lot of people that said no. Basically, they went out to Zebulun and Naphtali. They were able to raise people. And some people came that they didn't even call Ephraim, for instance. But there were others, the people of Reuben, the people of Gilead, the people of Dan. You know, they just had no interest whatsoever. Have you ever, like, tried to get something going in the local church and it's like, man, this sounds so great. Hey, the Lord is working. I know the Lord is working. I know if we act in faith that we can count on a lot of help from God. But there's always the people, I don't know. I'm too busy for that. You know, when you hear a lot of no's, are you going to be demotivated? You're going to throw in the towel? You're going to quit? You're going to become angry with others? You're going to give up? You're going to stop doing things? You're going to get embittered against the local church? You're going to say a religion is a joke because some people said no? Hey, not these people. I'm going, and who is going with me? I'm going to go even if I'm going by myself. Did some people say no? Yeah, you know, what this tells me is that the first thing that went wrong with this was the plan. But it's okay sometimes for the plan to go a little wrong, because remember, God is actually doing more work than anything else. And I noticed like with working with churches, you know, sometimes the plan goes wrong. You have this plan and the plan doesn't happen. You know, you need to think on your feet. You have to understand, you know, sometimes that's okay. God is going to do his work. God is going to do his work. And we just need to have faith in that. There's something really sad here. I'm just going to pause on it at verse 23. It said that, you know, curse Meroz, says the angel of the Lord. Utterly curse its inhabitants because they did not come to the help of the Lord, to the help of the Lord against the warriors. So I'm just going to put this out here. Sometimes you're busy. You've got other things going on in your life, but all of a sudden there's some brother or sister in need. Something comes up, maybe it's as small as someone's in the hospital and you need to pray, but things are just kind of thrown upon you, right? When things are thrown upon you suddenly, and you didn't plan to invest the time or the money or anything else, when the Lord needs you, and it's sort of on you, is that the time to falter? It seems like there's a very special curse upon the people that when God really needed them, when they were in a spot where they were given the ball and God needed them to run with it, and instead they put that ball down and they walked away, that is a grievous sin against God. So again, I'm just thinking about myself. When God really needs me, am I going to put the ball down and walk away, or am I going to be what God wants me to be? Because He knows that He has put things in me that are so extreme and so great, I don't understand how far they can go. I bet Barak had no idea that they would not only defeat the Canaanites, but they were actually going to end their civilization outright. They were going to destroy that culture from the face of the earth. Amazing. Beyond what we can ask or think, right? But, you know, that was thrown on him suddenly, you know. Deborah summons him, hey, I want you to do this. You know, surprise, surprise. Verse 24, most blessed of women is Jael, the wife of Heber the Canaanite. The ball was thrown on her suddenly. This guy runs into the tent. God has handed her the ball. Is she going to run with it or is she going to drop it? Let me tell you, she ran a touchdown on this one. And she ran down a touchdown on this one, knowing full well that her husband is an ally and friend of this guy. You need to be willing to run with the ball even when other people don't approve. If you're looking for people to pin a rose on your chest every time you do what God wants, you're not going to be a very good Christian. I mean, you need to do what God wants you to do. We need to be determined, you know. We got to have a backbone. We got to roll up our sleeves. We got to work with other people. And finally, the story ends here. I notice I'm 60 seconds over, so it's a good thing I'm at the last section. There's this little song about the Canaanite mother. And it seems like random and silly that it's even thrown in, but I think it really says a lot. Out of the window she looked and lamented, verse 28. The mother of Sisera, I bet she was old. Because their leading general's mother is still alive, wow, I bet she's old. She's looking through the lattice. Why does his chariot delay in coming? Why do the hoofbeats of the chariots tarry? Her wise princesses would answer her. Indeed, she repeats herself, words to herself. So, the old lady of the house is sitting in the window. Why aren't they back? They should have been back by now. Why aren't they back? I think she already knows. Why aren't they back? She keeps saying the same thing over and over and over. But the princesses, these are the young girls, right? I think it mockingly calls them wise. They say, you know, every single guy a maiden, or every single warrior a maiden or two for them, and, you know, they're just grabbing things. So every guy a maiden or two, you know what that's talking about, right? So, these are the worst war crime atrocities that are humanly imaginable. And it's rolling off their tongue like they're completely indifferent. It's rolling off their tongue like it's French poetry. If there was ever a culture that needed to end, it's Canaanite culture. There's a couple stories in Genesis about Canaanite culture, and when you read that, your skin just crawls. If there was any culture that needed to be eradicated, it was Canaanite culture. But
you know, verse 31, it tells us what the point in this little story is. Thus let your enemies perish. So here's what I think is going on. The old lady's looking out the window. She knows something's going on, but all the rest, everything is fine. Everything is fine. They're just raping and stealing along with the murder. You know, everything is fine. This is life the way it's supposed to be. And then God says, this is the way the enemies perish. So the way that the enemies perish is they don't know the sorry state that they're really in. So we end up with this. You know, when the invitation goes out and people refuse to be baptized, they don't know the state that they're really in. When people are presented with the fact that sin has separated them from God and it's not a matter of God weighing their good or bad deeds, nothing to do with that at all. They need to be reconciled to God and they say, no, I don't need that. They don't know the gravity of their situation. You're more like the person that's saying, you know, something isn't right here. I know something is horribly awry. Hopefully we're like the people like never, right? But you know, there's a lot of people, they just don't realize how serious hell is. When you're baptized, you know, you're born again, and I'm one of these people that, yeah, I preach baptism. Baptism now does save me, not as a removal of a dirt from the body, but as an appeal to God for a clear conscience. You need to do what God said when that ball was dropped on you, right? You need to obey the Lord. But, you know, sometimes people are like, you know, they have no idea what's coming. When you are baptized, you are born again. You know, you can be born again. You know that you can also die again. That's the book of Revelation that describes the second death. You know, and if we really came to terms with how destructive sin really is, we'd want to do everything in our power to get out of it. So anyway, there's an invitation that's out there. Just maybe by way of encouragement. It's interesting that Barak, the guy that said, you know, I'll go if you go, he's actually mentioned in Hebrews 11, chapter 32. Deborah isn't mentioned, but he is. So I wonder if there's something about, you know, sometimes we're reluctant. Sometimes we don't always do the right thing. Sometimes we have to be dragged along. But, you know, given a little push, maybe we can rise to the occasion, we can trust God, we can have faith. You know, that's really what it's all about. Just trusting in Him. And finally, I'm just going to throw this one out there. When do you think Deborah thought she really succeeded? When do you think she succeeded? Was it when the big thing happened? Canaan, the whole Canaanite culture crushed, you know, is that the success? You know, you read Judges the first time and you think, yeah, they beat the Canaanites. That must have been the end goal. You go back to the beginning when we were talking about how the roads were deserted in the days of Shamgar and how rough it was until I came, until Deborah, you know, a mother to Israel. So when you read that story, you know what she's saying? She's saying that they were succeeding when they were just talking about God. They were succeeding then. There was someone that they could talk to. There was someone that they could turn to. They could open up the book. They could read what it says. They can heal families. They can lift people up. She says she was being a mother to Israel, and that's really the success. And you know, the irony is, you know, the really big thing at the end, you know, crushing the Canaanites, you know, that was just the icing. So, anyway, it sounds like I can ramble on this forever. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk here. It's just so great to talk about the stories. You know, God can use any will to fill in the earth. Let's have faith.